Coming up in the next hour on Morning Ireland, penalty points, new allegations from whistleblower Maurice McCabe, which the Garda Commissioner says she is taking very seriously and which are currently being investigated. Also, the yes and no campaigns in Scotland. Fran will be talking to the Labour leader and Taoiseach Joan Burton as Labour's thinking begins in Wexford. And a first night in Galway, Tom Murphy's new play is put on by Druid. That's all in the next 60 minutes.
Good morning. It's 8 o'clock on Monday, September the 15th. This is RT Radio 1 and you're listening to Morning Ireland with Cathal McQuilla in Dublin and Fran McNulty here in Wexford Town.
The news headlines. The American Secretary of State John Kerry will meet foreign ministers from around the world at a conference in Paris today to discuss action to tackle the militant group Islamic State. Senior Garda management will meet the Garda whistleblower Sergeant Maurice McCabe today to discuss renewed allegations concerning the cancellation of penalty points. And a new report has found that an early discharge policy and better community rehabilitation could improve outcomes for stroke survivors and save money. The news in full from Brian Jennings.
The US Secretary of State John Kerry has said nearly 40 countries have offered to contribute to an international coalition to fight Islamic State militants in Iraq and Syria. Mr. Kerry said he was not asking any ally to commit troops. Speaking ahead of a conference in Paris today, Mr. Kerry said several Arab countries had offered to take part in airstrikes against the rebels, but any such action would be subject to approval from the Iraqi government.
We have countries in this region, countries outside of this region, in addition to the United States, all of whom are prepared to engage in military assistance, in actual strikes, if that is what it requires. And we also have a growing number of people who are prepared to do all the other things. People should not think about this just in terms of strikes. In fact, as some have pointed out, that alone is not going to resolve this challenge.
Senior Gardaí are expected to meet the Garda whistleblower Garda Sergeant Maurice McCabe today. The meeting follows renewed allegations relating to the cancellation of penalty points. Elaine Cure reports.
This afternoon's meeting at Garda headquarters follows more allegations from Sergeant McCabe detailing incidents where he says penalty points were incorrectly cancelled. The interim Garda Commissioner, Noreen O'Sullivan, yesterday said the new allegations are being investigated by senior management and the Minister for Justice, Francis Fitzgerald, has referred them to the Garda Ombudsman Commission. It is understood the allegations relate to off-duty Gardaí falsely claiming they were driving Garda vehicles at the time the offence was detected, and that they also relate to incidents where motorists had penalty points cancelled on three or possibly four occasions. A number of changes to the fixed charge penalty system were introduced in June to provide for stronger oversight of the system, including the introduction of regular audits. An audit is currently being conducted by the Garda Professional Standards Unit, and it's understood that Sergeant McCabe will meet with them as well as other senior Gardaí today to discuss how the situation can be addressed.
Stroke survivors could benefit from better rehabilitation in the community rather than longer stays in hospital, according to a report by the ESRI and the Royal College of Surgeons of Ireland. The report finds that 54% of stroke survivors could be discharged from hospital earlier each year. The move to care in the community would free up acute hospital beds and save between 2 and 7 million euro in health expenditure annually. On this programme, lead author of the report, Dr. May Van Ren, explain the benefits of patients being able to recover at home.
The people who have early supported discharge at home are much less likely to end up eventually going into long-term care, for instance, that they're likely to become much more independent in their daily lives. And the reason for this appears to be that if you have rehabilitation in the home setting, that is where you're going to be, and the rehabilitation is geared towards getting you up and running at home.
British Prime Minister David Cameron is due on the campaign trail in Scotland today in an attempt to convince voters to remain within the United Kingdom. With just 3 days of campaigning left, political leaders on both sides of the debate will be intensifying their efforts to win over undecided voters. First Minister Alex Salmond will be meeting business leaders to highlight the economic opportunities of a yes vote. The most recent opinion polls show Thursday's vote is too close to call. The Swedish Prime Minister has conceded defeat in the country's general election. Fredrik Reinfeldt has said he will step down as Prime Minister and as leader of a centre-right moderate party. The opposition Social Democrats are set to return to power, but without a clear majority. The funeral of Ian Paisley, the former DUP leader and First Minister of Northern Ireland, will take place today. He will be buried in County Down following a private funeral service at his family home in East Belfast. Our Northern editor Tommy Gorman.
88-year-old Ian Paisley had been in ailing health for several months. He passed away last Friday with family members around his bedside at his home on Belfast Cypress Avenue. He founded the Free Presbyterian Church, and it has many churches in Northern Ireland, including Martyrs Memorial on Belfast Ravenhill Road, where he preached most Sundays for several years. But his funeral service will take place at his family home, and he will be buried afterwards in County Down. Broadcasting organisations will observe the Paisley family's request for privacy. Dr. Paisley was a former First Minister of Northern Ireland and the founder and former leader of the DUP. At Stormont this morning, normal business will be suspended as members pay tribute to him and then sign a book of condolence. Several books have been opened at local authority buildings in the north. It's expected there will be a memorial service before the end of the year where members of the public will be able to pay their respects to one of the most significant and controversial figures of recent Irish history. Tommy Gorman, RTÉ News, Belfast.
Online news in the Irish language will be available for the first time on the RTÉ.ie news website from this morning. National, international and regional news will be included on the website and on the RTÉ News Now app. The new service is being provided by Nuacht RTÉ and RTÉ Radio na Gaeltacht, the journalists in Ballinahowan and Castle Connemara. Also from today, all RTÉ radio news bulletins in the Irish language will be delivered from the studios of Radio na Gaeltacht in Castle. Now the time is coming up to 7 minutes past eight.
RTÉ Radio 1 weather with Continental Tyres. Premium tyres engineered in Germany for when braking really counts. Continental Tyres.
Mist and fog in many areas this morning, with the risk of some dense fog in places. But this will clear gradually ahead of a mainly dry day with sunny spells. However, a few isolated light showers may develop. Highest temperatures 16 to 20 degrees.
Thank you, Armin. Just gone 8 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let's find out what it says in today's papers now. Here's Caroline Murphy.
€30 a week per child for parents returning to work. That, according to the headline on the front of the Irish Times this morning, is one of the plans for next month's budget. We're told it's a return to work dividend. It's aimed at improving income for families who move from welfare to work, and those who qualify will be entitled to hold on to the payment for up to 3 years. The payments to defeated councillors, meanwhile, make the lead story in the Irish Independent. Councillors share £12 million payoff after losing seats, is the headline. The story says that's the amount which has been paid out to part-time politicians since the local elections in what the piece called parachute payments. We're told the gratuities are made in recognition of long service and to cushion the blow of life after politics, and that at the higher end, they're worth almost £65,000. There's follow-up inside with a two-page spread laying out individual amounts paid, while Shane Phelan expresses the view that, never mind the mind-boggling formula, voters will be baffled they exist at all. When you consider, he says, that 20 of our local authorities are technically insolvent, citizens have every right to question why £11.6 million has been spent cushioning the blow for ex-councillors departing office. But what, meanwhile, of the continuing suggestion that some Gardaí are still cushioning the blow for members of the force, friends and family who receive penalty points? That's the subject of the lead story in the Irish Examiner today. Gardaí find fresh excuses to delete penalty points, is the headline. Michael Clifford says thousands of suspicious deletions have occurred since the matter first came to public attention over 18 months ago. And he reports also that Sergeant Maurice McCabe has been asked to assist the Professional Standards Unit in a bid to crack down on the abuse. Editorially, the paper is very critical. If the reports are true, says the writer, then our police force has become a sorry, dysfunctional, corrupt and out of control force. We and the great majority of Gardaí cannot afford or tolerate this malpractice or its consequences. An unambiguous and early statement from the Garda representative organisations is essential, says the writer, one that reassures the public that the malpractice described will neither be tolerated nor defended. Dublin City Council's plans to tackle homelessness make the front of the Times. Prefabs may be used to ease the housing crisis, is the headline there. While a man who's taking a case to get out of the prison which has been his home for the past few years makes the lead in the Irish Daily Mail. Wife killer Lillis, I want early release, is the headline. In the story, Paul Caffrey reports that following a major court ruling which increased prisoner remission from a quarter to a third, Eamon Lillis is one of a number of inmates going to the High Court looking for early release. Well-placed insiders, we're told, say that up to 200 prisoners serving fixed-term sentences for serious offences are expected to seek early release between now and Christmas, and that many are likely to seek compensation. They've nothing to lose by making the application, we're told. Laya Healthcare is making a new offer to those looking for life insurance, according to a piece on the front of The Independent. €10 a month, life insurance set to spark price war, is the headline over the piece, which reports that the country's second largest healthcare provider is about to shake up the market with a new no-frills product. But finally this morning, there's much about Dr. Ian Paisley. The Times reports on page 5 that his private funeral is taking place today. That paper also has a picture of Martin McGuinness signing the book of condolence in Derry, while an analysis piece by Jerry Moriarty underneath is headlined, Prodigal Son Who Squandered Talents on Bigotry. In The Examiner, meanwhile, T.B. O'Mahony writes of Dr. Paisley that his hate-filled rhetoric left a trail of dead bodies in its wake. His legacy is a very mixed one, and there's a very dark side to it. Of him, it could be said, says O'Mahony, you may not have carried a gun, but your words were certainly weapons. And so at the end of the day, as The Independent concludes about the man and his burial today, it will be the simplest of ends for one of the most iconic yet complex figures in Northern Irish history.
Caroline, thank you very much. It's 13 minutes past 8. We've been here before. Welcome back. You listen to Morning Ireland at 8:15. Now, we've been told by the Department of Justice that they received allegations, the latest allegations, about the cancellation of penalty points last week. And a spokesperson for the Minister, Frances Fitzgerald, said she had sent these allegations on to the Garda Ombudsman Commission again last week for investigation after a request from the Garda Commissioner. One other point just worth mentioning is that, according to the Department, the Minister, Frances Fitzgerald, was not aware when she sent on this request for an investigation by the Garda Ombudsman Commission. She was not aware of the identity of the person making the allegations. However, it's fairly clear now, as a result of reporting in a number of places, including the This Week programme on RT yesterday, that they come from the Garda whistleblower, Garda Sergeant Maurice McCabe, who has been advised by Transparency International since he approached their helpline. And John Devitt has been in touch with him again, I know, and joins us now off Transparency International. Good morning.
Good morning.
And welcome. What, give us an idea what these latest allegations concern. In other words, the cancelling of penalty points, on what grounds?
In the past, people might remember that senior Gardaí above the rank of inspector were cancelling penalty points on the basis that they were late for a swimming lesson, or that their cows had been stung by bees. In one case, we believe a motorist had his penalty points cancelled because he was pregnant. These exotic excuses were identified
That's
fairly
the past.
Easily
before last June.
Yeah, and the Garda report and the Garda inspectorate had identified this problem last year or earlier this year. What appears to have been happening since then is that Gardaí are going into the pull system and cancelling penalty points using less exotic excuses
such
that
as
might not be picked up on or be suspicious, such as that the car was an emergency vehicle. But we know, certainly Mick Clifford has been writing today, that some of the cars that were apparently emergency vehicles were actually commercial vehicles or cars that would not be driven by the Gardaí, and that other Gardaí have been saying that they haven't been able to issue summons or notices because the motorist wasn't at the address, when that appears not to have been the case. They're saying that the points weren't delivered because of inability to post them, for example. So there appears to have been a pattern here, particularly in relation to serving Gardaí. McClifford writes this morning that in some cases points were struck off because a townland did not exist, but it existed. It didn't exist for some motorists. It appears that those points were written off for Gardaí, not for other motorists. So the excuses being recorded are a little more sophisticated than they were in the past.
Yeah, John Burke was also reporting some of those, and also another one about address not known, even though we're talking about Gardaí, whose addresses are obviously known.
Yeah.
To the
Gardaí. Yeah. I mean, you'll remember that the former Garda Commissioner, Martin Callanan, had said some time back that when he was caught speeding, he was on his way to a meeting. I believe that he was driving his own personal car in that case. This pattern, this excuse appears to have been, appears to be continuing, where Gardaí are having the points cancelled. And the Garda writing the points off, saying that they were driving while on duty.
Now, are we talking, first of all, because penalty points can be cancelled for valid reasons, let's remember that. Are we talking about cases entirely that are in investigation now because Maurice McCabe believes the cancelling was improper?
Well, I believe that other Gardaí have come to Maurice McCabe and alerted him of this practice as well, and that the incidents that are the subject of scrutiny today and yesterday have happened since the reforms were promised. We were told that the Thurles centralised processing office, which would oversee the penalty point system, would be overseeing and cancelling the cancellation and cancelling these points.
And it'll all be straightened out. But just to be clear, are we talking about cases that are about which there's, let's say, questions need to be asked? Are we talking about some that might be perfectly innocent and justifiable?
I think in many cases we're talking about cases that where questions need to be asked of the Gardaí who had cancelled the points. They're saying that Gardaí are on duty when clearly they're not on the roster. And they're using excuses that they believe would not provoke suspicion, but where there is a reason for suspicion.
Right, well, two obvious questions arise in terms of how you see this, because I know that you've met the Minister Francis Fitzgerald earlier in the summer. Are you happy that this is going to be looked into properly, bearing in mind that we're looking in a situation where you've an acting Garda Commissioner who's going to apply for a job to head her own force, and this is happening while she's in charge? And GSOC are also looking into this. Are you happy it's going to be investigated properly? And secondly, what about the position of Maurice McCabe? I mean, if he's still acting as a whistleblower, is his position in the position of the Garda, is it, well, let's say, how difficult is it?
We've kept in touch with Maurice since he came to us through our helpline in 2012, and we've always been concerned. Our primary concern has been for his welfare and his well-being, and that of his family. He's been isolated at work. He's found it very difficult at times to do his work, and it was only this year that his right to use Pulse was restored by the Garda Commissioner. I think he may need to be relocated to a position where he doesn't face the same kind of reprisal or face isolation at
work.
What
do you mean?
Well, I would suggest that he may be moved to another, perhaps another district or to a different unit within the Gardaí that might be able to make use of his skills. But at the moment, he's in a very difficult position in Mullingar.
You think he would want that?
Garda station. I think he would be happy with a move to another.
And in the meantime, unit. Are you happy that this is being investigated as it should be?
I think if anything good comes of this case, it's that the Garda Commissioner and the Minister accept that at least it may be happening. In the past, the Minister for Justice and the Garda Commissioner denied that it was happening and sought to isolate and discredit the whistleblowers. I think we've seen some movement in that regard.
Just one other question before you go. How many allegations are we talking about?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I wouldn't be able to tell you how many allegations we're dealing with, but we're talking about a significant number here. Well, Maurice McCabe seems to believe that there is serious cause for concern enough for him to report this to the Garda Commissioner and GSOC.
John Devitt of Transparency International, thank you.
Let's go to Scotland now, where opinion polls suggest Thursday's referendum on Scottish independence is on a knife edge. Over the weekend, thousands of activists across Scotland took to the streets to try and persuade voters to vote either yes or no. Peter Gagan went out onto the streets of Glasgow with campaigners from both sides to get an up-close glimpse of the battle for Scotland.
On a Saturday, Glasgow's Buchanan Street is normally thronged with shoppers, but this Saturday was packed with tens of thousands of independent supporters singing and waving banners. 50 miles across central Scotland, Edinburgh was a cacophony of flutes and drums as more than 10,000 orange men and women marched for a no vote in Thursday's referendum. Right across Scotland, campaigners on both sides have been working overtime to try and win support, and just as importantly, to get their vote out. In Glasgow's leafy West End, independent supporters blow up balloons at their makeshift stall by the side of a busy road. The table is crammed with posters, badges and stickers, all bear the same word, yes.
Independence is about social justice, and it's about putting the community of Scotland back into the heart of our political system.
This is Marcin Doherty, a local Scottish National Party councillor.
We don't have full leverage of the economic control of our country and the assets of this country, and I think we'll be far better off out of the union than we are in it, and we've never been. The levels of poverty in Scotland in the union are a testimony to its failure.
If the Yes campaign does win, it'll be largely because it has won over those frustrated by party politics. Glaswegian Linda Brooks is one of thousands who has spent countless hours knocking on doors, delivering leaflets and manning stalls like this one.
I've never campaigned on behalf of a political party, but I just felt this is a really important question for Scotland, and so it was worth actually participating. And if I can convince one person, then, you know, that was energy well spent.
The stall is popular. Some passing cars beep their horns. Pedestrians stop to chat. Among them is Akif Eshan.
I'd rather take the chance and see what happens. I think in the long run we'll prosper on our own.
Of course, there are many in Scotland who do not want the three-century-old union with England to end. In Glasgow, the Labour Party has been the loudest voice calling for a no. In a recently renovated 1950s-era council housing development near the city centre, I joined up with Labour activists campaigning against independence.
I think there's a lot of quiet no's because people are very resolute and have made up their minds, and they feel that they don't need to be overly expressive. On the campaigning we've done, lots and lots of people have just said, oh, we've made up our minds. There's no need to do any more than we're doing.
And also speaking to the remaining undecided voters that we know about, so that's our priority for the next few days. So some of us are going to head over to Town Head and another team's going to...
Clipboard and pen in hand, the group leader outlines the afternoon's plan of action to around 20 activists. Among those knocking doors is Glasgow City Council leader Gordon Mattison.
It's best for the economy of Glasgow and for Scotland that we stay as part of the union, and frankly we're sending out a crazy message to this world. If a peaceful, redistributive 300-year-old union is being potentially broken up.
Peter Gagan reporting there from Glasgow. It's 8:26.
Queen Elizabeth joined in the campaign, though maybe that's not the right way of putting it. She certainly had things to say about the decision the Scots are going to make this week when she said during a visit to Balmoral yesterday that she hopes voters in Scotland will think very carefully about the future. We're joined now by Muir Dickey, Financial Times Scotland correspondent. Good morning and thanks for taking the call.
Good morning.
I just wonder, let's talk about the Queen first of all. Very, very careful language. Is that going to weigh, the fact that she had some words to say, is that going to have any impact?
Well, the people on the no side of the debate were certainly welcoming it. I guess the cautious tone that they read into her remarks, they feel helping their case that this is a kind of a dangerous and difficult decision that people are making. But she certainly didn't come very clearly off the fence.
Now, people here have been impressed from everything we read and see with what sounds like a very lively, very passionate, but also, on the whole, very polite and reasoned discussion of a major question facing the Scots. Is that how you see it?
Yes, I mean, I think one wouldn't want to be, you know, too naive about it. There has been a nasty fringe to the debate from the start online. We've had lots of very insulting and unpleasant things said on Twitter. There have been some pretty fierce arguments in bars and on the streets. But in the main, yes, this has been a very positive debate, I think. I saw yesterday in Edinburgh Park two people discussing extremely vigorously the intricacies of currency policy after independence, but they managed to leave civilly at each other. And all across Scotland, there is that kind of very, very vigorous, but in the main, still relatively friendly debate.
David Cameron is crossing the border again today, his second trip since the start of the campaign. Do you think he cuts much ice? I mean, the fact that he comes obviously is going to be impress some people, but other than that, can anything he say make any difference?
It's a real dilemma for the Prime Minister. I mean, he is personally not popular in Scotland. The Conservative Party is also widely unpopular, and yet he can't not come because he's the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. And a large part of the argument for people to stay at the moment is to say that things will change and Scotland will get new powers, even if it votes no. So he has to be making that case, and he has to be reaching out to people and showing there's a future in the the United Kingdom. But there's no question that his presence will help the nationalist side to say that, well, if Scotland stays in the UK, all it gets is more Conservative government.
The BBC's poll of polls, the latest reckoning, according to them, puts the no on 51%, yes on 49%. How do you read it?
Well, the thing is, we just don't know. There's no precedent for this kind of referendum. The polls have been telling very different stories throughout the campaign, and still differ on how many people are undecided. But they all agree now that it's very close. It's possible that they might be missing segments of the population that will vote, as you heard, perhaps for the first time. And it's also possible that people who are intending to vote no, or who will end up voting no, are reluctant to say that because of this more general mood of nationalist passion. We don't know, but it looks very close.
Well, we're all fascinated over here for obvious reasons. It's good to talk to you, Muir Dickey of the Financial Times in Scotland. It's 8:30. Sport again, Pádraig Lodge.
Thanks, Col. Good morning. Well, Cork are the All-Ireland Senior Camogie Champions for the first time since 2009. Second half goals from Jenny O'Leary and Angela Walsh helped them come from 5 points behind at half-time to beat Kilkenny by 2-12-1-9. Between football and camogie, Breach Corkery was winning her 13th All-Ireland medal yesterday.
I suppose I just can't believe it yet. I suppose in the first half we weren't performing and we were down 6 points going in, and you know, I think the camp was a little dead, but you know, we had to rev ourselves up at half time, and I just needed a little bit of time for it to sink in, I'd say.
I don't know whether you know this or not, Breach, but the scoreline in the second half was 2 goals at 8 points to 3 points. That's some comeback.
Yeah, I suppose we had nothing to lose on it, to try and make a good game out of this. And, you know, we were beaten in the first half, but, you know, it just goes to show the hard work we've done through the year has paid off, and Spike Island has paid off as well.
You might explain to people around the country about Spike Island. It was a heavy training session.
We went to an army camp in Spike Island in Cove. We did a horrendous training about discipline, communication, and you know, working as a team. And I think that showed here now today, where we all got behind each other when the chips were down, and we're just clean delighted.
How busy is it for yourself? Because this is your 5th All Ireland Camogie medal, and now you have the football in 2 weeks' time.
I suppose Angela, Rena, and myself need to come back down to Earth first thing tomorrow morning, maybe. But you know, we're looking forward to the next game. We know we've another 60 minutes of incredible hard work to do, but we'll try our best. We'll enjoy tonight, and we'll go from there.
Yes, Cork playing Dublin in the ladies' football final in Croke Park on Sunday week. That was Breach Corkery speaking to Pat McAuliffe. Limerick, managed by Joe Quaid, were crowned intermediate champions with a 112-10 points win over Kilkenny, while Down won the Premier Junior title, beating Laois by 112-18. A crowd of just over 12,000 attended yesterday's triple header. We're joined on the line now by Sunday game camogie analyst Trace O'Callaghan, who won 3 All-Ireland senior medals during her playing career with Cork. Good morning, Trace.
Good morning, Pádraig.
Well, your assessment of the game yesterday, first of all, the senior encounter, quite a remarkable comeback by Cork.
Absolutely, an amazing second half fight back from Cork. I suppose it's one of the best we've seen in any All-Ireland final. There were 5 points behind at the break, and then to win by six, which is an 11-point turnaround, and you know, that's simply fantastic. I suppose in the first half I felt that Cork goalkeeper Aoife Murray, I know she was beaten by Michelle Quilty early on, but after that I thought she was excellent. And then in the second half, when Cork took the game to Kilkenny, Jennifer O'Leary's goal pushed them ahead, then they shut down in the back line, and Angela Walsh's goal then at the death was the icing on the cake for them.
There are no words of consolation for Kilkenny losing the final 2 years in a row. How did they lose their way in the match?
Yeah, as you said, no words, Parik. I mean, to lose one final is heartbreaking, but to lose two on one day, you know, it must be so hard for them to take this morning. How did they lose their way? They had their chances in the first half, but, you know, they didn't take them. They had both goal and point opportunities, and, you know, they didn't really build up, you know, enough advantage at the break when they were on top. And then Cork opened up in the second half, and they overtook Kilkenny, as Pat McAuliffe said there. It was 2-8 to 3 points. I mean, they'll have no complaints about that, but they were just completely swept away in the second half. And my view was that when they were on top, you know, they hadn't taken advantage of it.
On the Sunday game last night, now, Cyril Farrell suggested that the Camogie Association needs to develop female officials and referees for their big games. There was quite a heated discussion that followed, but what's your view on Cyril's core point?
Well, my view on the referee issue, which I think is what the core point last night was, I think what needs to be addressed is the rules. You know, they need to be updated before we start looking at referees. Like, the game has moved on in the last few years. It's moved on for the better, but the rules haven't changed. And I know the referees are anxious that the rules would be changed, you know, to give them more power to make probably better calls. Like, I see a lot of these referees officiating at GA matches, and, you know, there aren't any issues. So for me, the rules is the first thing I'd like to see looked at, Parik.
Okay, and then looking at the junior and intermediate finals, just a few comments on those.
Yeah, what a day for Limerick. I mean, we all saw the pictures afterwards of Joe Quaid and the celebrations. You know, Limerick Camogie is in a great place this morning. They have won 3 All-Irelands this year, the minor, the junior and the intermediate, and, you know, they'll step up to senior now, and, you know, what 2015 lies ahead is brilliant for Limerick Camogie. And Niamh Mulcahy was the standout player yesterday. She got 7 points, and I suppose just to mention Down as well, they lost the 2012 and 2013 finals, and you know, there's a lot of credit due to them for coming back and for winning it at the third time of asking.
Okay, Therese, thanks a million. That's it. Therese O'Callaghan there joining us to reflect on the weekend's Camogie action. American Billy Horschel won the lucrative Tour Championship in Atlanta, coming home 3 shots clear of the field. Rory McIlroy slipped out of contention with a closing round of 71 as he found water on the 6th hole for double bogey, while he also dropped shots on the 9th, 10th and 11th holes. McIlroy tied for 2nd place with American Jim Furyk, and it's clear that he's now looking forward to some downtime.
It's still been a great year. You know, I was coming in here with really high hopes and expectations, and haven't quite been able to play the golf to live up to those. But, you know, it's still been a great season for me, and, you know, there's still a little bit of golf left, and, you know, looking forward, as I said, to this little bit of time off and get back at it maybe next weekend and get ready for the Ryder Cup.
Cork-based Avondale United from the Munster Senior League will make the long journey to Donegal on Wednesday night for an FAI Cup quarter-final replay against Finn Harps and Ballybuffet. The sides drew 1-1 in Cork yesterday. Manchester United season looks to be finally up and running. They were 4-0 winners over QPR at Old Trafford in the English Premier League, recording a first win since Dutchman Louis van Gaal took charge at Old Trafford. New signing Angel Di Maria scored the first goal, with Wayne Rooney, Ander Herrera and Juan Mata also on the score sheet. The final day of the first ever Champions Weekend at the Curragh saw British success in the Irish St. Ledger as Brown Panther gave trainer Tom Dascombe and jockey Richard Kingscote their first classic success. He beat the favourite Leading Light by 6.5 lengths. Over 10,000 racegoers attended yesterday's fixture, which was twice as many as last year, and it follows a 13,000 crowd at Leopardstown on Saturday. Local favourite Alberto Contador wrapped up his third Tour of Spain triumph when he comfortably held on to his overall lead in the final stage time trial. Britain's Chris Froome finished second overall, a minute and 10 seconds behind him. Dan Martin ended the event in 7th, with Philip Deignan 39th. And there was defeat for Belfast Mark Allen in the final of the Shanghai Masters snooker. He lost out to Stuart Bingham of England, who won by 10 frames to 3. Fran.
Porrick, thank you for that. You're welcome back to White's Hotel in Wexford Town. We're here today as Labour holds its pre-Dáil Parliamentary Party meeting, play-acting before the real game begins. Longford West Meath TD Willie Penrose told us earlier in the programme. The Labour leader in Taunus, Joan Burton, is with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Fran.
Willie Penrose hasn't much regard for these days. What's the real value?
Willie is Willie, and he's a great Labour Party person, and I think he'll probably be joining us later on. The value of the day, of the two days, is to basically have a look at where the country is going, how the recovery is spreading out to people and communities right across Ireland, and not just in the bigger towns and cities. So it's an opportunity after a holiday break for people in the parliamentary party to talk about issues like housing, to look at the investment into broadband, very important for rural areas and rural business startups, and also to talk about the recovery in the economy, and obviously to hear from people their views in relation to the forthcoming budget. What's important is that the country has now begun a slow recovery, and it's very obvious talking to people here in Wexford last night, and this morning I'm opening the new social welfare office in Wexford, the new Intrio office, where we're really putting the focus on getting people back to work. And thankfully, the live register in Wexford has fallen quite significantly over the last year.
And this morning, reading the Irish Times, there's a prominent story in the Irish Times about something which is to be announced in the budget, a return to work dividend. And you're quoted in that story detailing what this dividend is about.
And I've discussed this in great detail with the Taoiseach, and I'm happy to say that our partners in government are strongly supportive. It's all about, I suppose, the change that I have pioneered in the Department of Social Protection to turn it in relation to people who are of working age from a passive provider of benefits where people call in, collect money, and nobody necessarily talks to them again, to a focus to working with employers, both small and large, to actually get people back to work. So what we're creating, Fran, is a public employment service which actually offers to employers who are recruiting, and they are recruiting now, jobs to people who are on the live register. That's the critical thing, and that's what the story in the Irish Times and the other newspapers is about. I want to move to a situation where individuals and people with children move back to work, they get an additional incentive to tie them over the period when there's a bit of uncertainty moving from welfare to work, and they retain extra support.
What you're proposing doing is giving a payment to somebody to address serious issues within the workforce, namely that wages are too low and social welfare rates are too high, and your solution is to pay more social welfare.
With respect, Fran, I think you're actually wrong there. The biggest difficulty that faces people who've been unemployed is that the longer that period of unemployment is, when they go for an interview, they have a gap in their CV. Employers look at them and they get worried and say, will I really take this person on? Also, from the point of view of an individual who, say, has two or three children, if they go to work, they lose currently the extra child allowances that they get on social welfare. What I'm proposing is a back-to-work dividend for people going back to work, where on a sliding scale over a period of time, they would hold on to those allowances. We've tried that in other respects and at other times, and it's been successful, and I'm anxious to do that again. It's not hugely costly.
Is it acceptable now for government ministers to start announcing ahead of the budget measures that are going to be included?
This was discussed by myself and the Taoiseach at length, both in government buildings during our discussions around the formation of the new cabinet, but it has also been discussed by me at numbers of conferences around the country. Also, people like the ESRI have talked to us about how, in terms of families with children, we need, if you like, an extra package, and that's what we're looking at in this.
Can I talk to you about your position? We've seen what's been referred to as the Burton bounce, the polls improving somewhat for your party. Gerry Adams put it very starkly last week when he said, you are an architect of austerity, and there's very little difference between you and what's gone before. What would you say to Gerry Adams about that?
Well, what I would say to Gerry Adams is that if people were to give Gerry Adams responsibility for the economy...
Sorry,
you're quoting Mr. Adams. Just let me say this. In my view, if people were to give control of the economy to Sinn Féin, they might as well hand the keys of the country back to the Troika. What I have done, and Professor John Fitzgerald of the SRI was on your programme in the last couple of weeks, acknowledging as an independent think tank that what has happened in relation to social welfare in the last 3 years has been the protection of core rates. And that is borne out by the figures that the social scientists do in relation
but you
to
and your leadership,
how people
what
fare.
Is the difference between Joan Burton and Eamon Gilmore?
Well, the difference is this, that first of all, notwithstanding all of the very great work that Eamon did in his period as Taoiseach and his work for restoring the country's reputation internationally, we had a difficult result in the local elections. Eamon decided to stand down, and I went before the party and spoke to individually and in hustings around the country, which yourselves in the media were invited in to attend in full, and you recorded it all. I met people, and people gave me their trust and their support, and I now have a mandate to proceed to build this country.
It doesn't answer the question, though. Fundamentally, what is the difference between the two of you?
Well, we come from the same political party, but I believe my focus has always been, both as an opposition TD, as a government minister, and now as leader, to focus relentlessly on getting people back to work. Can I just go back to your analogy or your comment about Sinn Féin and Mr. Adams? Just let me say this. The thing that most disappoints me about Sinn Féin as a party which seeks to represent working people is that they seem relentlessly opposed to any measures that help people back to work. It's almost as though they want a welfare economy rather than a working, vibrant economy with small business, large business and individuals at work and growing and getting prosperity for all of us.
You made certain choices when you announced your cabinet choices, and some people weren't best pleased with it, amongst them Pat Rabbit, who effectively said that he felt he was excluded on the basis of his age. Do you see a role for Pat Rabbit and Eamon Gilmore and others who were excluded in the future? In other words, do you want them to be candidates in the next election?
Of course, and as I'm aware in terms of Pat and Eamon, and as I've acknowledged publicly, they made a very solid and major contribution to the fortunes of the Labour Party over a long period of time. I also, though, in selecting people to serve in government, I was anxious to include some of the younger members. I refer to them as the class of 2011 who came into the Dáil in recent times. So I hope now there's a balance in terms of the Cabinet, Labour Party members, between experience and people who are young and fresh with new ideas.
Politically, could you have stored up difficulties for yourself in the manner in which you handled it?
Fran, there's always risks in politics. I've always been a risk taker in politics. My background is working as an accountant, getting things moving for people and getting the country moving. I make no apologies. That's my particular background. But I also have, as somebody who worked in education with students over a long period of time at third level, I think I have a fairly good understanding of how this economy works and how we can actually make it better for everyone in the country.
We spoke earlier in the programme. I spent the last few days speaking to members of your parliamentary party. Joanna Tuffy says we need people to know that the hardship cuts are over. Lorraine Higgins says we need to do something about the universal social charge.
Yeah, and I think that they are very fair comments, and I think it's good that you're putting that to me. First of all, I want to be honest with people. From the period of the collapse of the economy, the bank guarantee and the Troika coming in and us having to borrow on penal terms from the Troika, something like 30 billion was taken out of the economy. Now, I'm not saying to your listeners at home this morning at the breakfast table that it's going to be possible to restore that in one budget or indeed in three budgets or in five budgets. Anybody who says that is being dishonest. What we can can achieve and what I'm undertaking to do is steady growth, expansion and investment. And we're actually on track to do that. You spoke about the opinion poll. The key thing in the opinion poll yesterday, to me, is that 61% of people believe that the economy is moving in the right direction. I think I know why. It's because they can see life coming back to the economy, people going back to work, and businesses getting on their feet again.
And part of that, one of your new ministers, Jed Nash, saying today that we could see full employment in this country by 2017 or 2018. Do you think that's a realistic objective?
Well, the government program for that is to have that by 2020. And that's why, going back to your issue on the budget, I think it's really important. And already
Is he been over-enthusiastic?
No, I think he's ambitious, as most young people are ambitious.
Has he been realistic?
I think it's possible under certain circumstances, but I would expect it to be perhaps in a slightly slower vein. But just let me say this. I've been talking to Michael Noonan about how we shape budgets for 3 to 5 years that actually produce a track for investment and for growth that gets us to that. And that's what Jed is talking about.
We're effectively out of time, but I want to ask you a last question about a story in the Irish Times today where a senior executive in Dublin City Council is suggesting building prefabricated houses on derelict sites in Dublin to deal with the housing problem. Is that acceptable to you as the leader of the Labour Party?
Well, first of all, can I say to Dublin City Council, because I have met the new manager, Owen Keegan, on several occasions, I want the closed up properties that Dublin City Council has reopened.
Our prefab
Dublin
solution.
City Council.
We are out of time.
I don't particularly think that they are, but what I want is there are a couple of thousand properties which have been boarded up. Dublin City Council are being funded to reopen that.
Prefabs,
and that's the first
them,
thing.
Do you find it an acceptable solution?
Well, it's a proposal by an official. I haven't had any further details. I want to see homes for families and I want to see permanent construction.
All right, Tánaiste to Joan Burton. Thank you for joining us this morning in Wexford. It's 8:50.
Thank you, Fran. To end, a world premiere in Galway last night, a new play by Tom Murphy, Brigitte, is described as a prequel to one of Tom Murphy's best-known plays, Baile Gan Gairde. Both plays are being staged by Druid, the company with which Murphy has had a long-standing relationship. Our Western correspondent, Pat McGrath, found out how the past has influenced the present in Druid's latest productions.
Once I loved with fond affection, all my thoughts they were in thee.
Siobhan McKenna playing Momo in the 1985 Druid production of Tom Murphy's Baile Gan Gairde. She described the role as the most difficult part she ever played.
Now ye like that one.
Her performance alongside Marie Mullen and Mary McAvoy was feted, with reviews at the time describing the production as superb, stunning, extraordinary.
We knew from once we read the script that it was going to be a fantastic event because it was just, he wrote three wonderful women and we were just chomping at the bit to get to show them, you know.
There's been a link between Druid and Tom Murphy for over three decades, and that sense of continuity is central to their latest collaboration.
Bridget was one of our own. The Blessed Virgin was a Jewish, a foreigner.
I would hardly call the mother of our Saviour a foreigner.
But smaller.
Last night's premiere of Bridget played as a double bill with Baile Gan Gairde at Galway's Town Hall Theatre. The new play sets the scene for the older work, with a central role for Marie Mullen, who now plays the character of Momo in both plays.
When we read the new play, it was very poignant and very moving for us to go back to those characters. And the idea of putting the two together is a great experience because it's like living with them when they were 30 years previously and then with Baile Gan Gairde again. So it's magical.
Get ye be settling now, my fondlings. And I'll be giving ye a nice story again tonight when I finish this, and ye'll be going to sleep.
It felt like I had never done it before. At odd times, there are ghosts in the machine. You hear echoes of some of the rhythms from the past, but essentially, all theatre is absolutely of the moment. You know, anything you've done in the past, it disappears. It's the most, you know, the play makes new connections with new actors, with new audiences. And I think the extraordinary thing is to come back to this play and feel it's utterly contemporary. It could have been written today, it could have been written tomorrow.
Druid's artistic director Gary Hines on revisiting a work first staged almost three decades ago. And she says the way Murphy's writing resonates is part of his appeal.
I think Tom's ability to get to make his plays feel like everybody else's personal experience. I think that's the essence of the work, and that's why it's so alive.
And audiences seeing Bridget for the first time in Galway have been impressed.
Well, it's an excellent play, really good. Dark in a lot of places, but there is a bit of light in it as well.
Bridget, fantastic, yeah, really liked it. It was a bit of humour, which was good, yeah. It was very realistic, I think, yeah.
I thought it was a superb production. Excellent. Strongly recommend anyone to go to it.
Now in his 80th year, Tom Murphy says working with Druid rejuvenates him. As his newest play takes flight, he's been looking back on his links with the company and at his writing career.
The greatest day of my life was arriving in Galway on a Sunday, and I couldn't believe it that they were showing three plays of mine, because I was born 20 miles away. So it was a very special day. When I started, I thought max 5 years as a writer. I'm nearly 60 years at the game. I was a child author, obviously.
And that's Tom Murphy. Now you know what the greatest day of his life was. Pat McGraw is reporting there, and Bridget and Bailagan Gáire are both on at the Town Hall Theatre until next Sunday, when the run ends with a matinee. Minute to nine.